This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Accelerate your day with today's business headlines with Volvo Cars.
Good morning, I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, Melissa Idris. And time to look at the top business stories of the day. I do sound like I'm about to die, but that's
no.
It's not a function of the stories. The stories are quite
Sharad's
interesting.
Sharad's losing his voice. I'm just on the eve of Raya. So, you know, I hope you don't fall sick over the weekend.
Yeah, I can salam people. I can kind of croak Selamat Hari Raya. But I'm always willing to pocket that ang pao.
I'm sure you
in the
would.
The green packet ang pao. Okay. Now, look at the countries. Finances, talk of the town before May 9th, and of course, since May 9th, very important in terms of the discussion about where this country is going. Yesterday, Moody's published a report analyzing the implications of the new Malaysian government's policy on the sovereign credit profile. They say this first transition of power in Malaysia has introduced some policy challenges.
Yeah, some uncertainty specifically around government debt. Moody's claiming that Malaysia's direct government debt for 2017 was just below 51% of GDP, to be precise, 50.8%. And this is in direct contrast to the figure that was stated by our new finance minister, Lim Guan Eng. He says that the figure is closer to 80%.
Yeah, well, you know, coming out of this, there have been several responses, but most notably from the former Prime Minister, Dato' Sri Najib Razak, who feels that that he's personally vindicated by this statement or this report coming out of Moody's. He wrote on Facebook, which is his platform currently, Moody's, and I'm going to quote it, Moody's have independently assessed the Harapan government's claim of a 1 trillion ringgit debt and a self-declared debt to GDP ratio of some 80.3% and have found those claims to be untrue and have maintained our debt ratio at about 50.8%. And this is the clincher. He says, you can mislead the people, but you cannot mislead the experts.
Wow, there you go. He's feeling a bit vindicated. I have to say, Moody's has been wrong before, famously so in the global financial crisis. But okay, Lim Guan Eng has said that he disputes the report, saying that, well, you know, that 50% figure, fair enough, it's there. He admits that to be true. However, it doesn't take into consideration the true extent of government debt. It only takes into account direct government debt. So you have to look at contingent liabilities, which also include public-private partnership, lease payments, as well as government guarantees.
And of course, you know, what we've had, Melissa, in the last couple of weeks have been the opening of red files. We never talked about red files in government before, but that's something that the new government has revealed about the management of our finances, the management of contracts. There's been a certain opaqueness about governance in the
some
past.
Some kind of like clause that provide commissions for large-scale projects, right?
Yeah, extraordinary things. I mean, this is setting aside, this is going about government. We're not talking about, you know, handbags and jewelry and gold bars found in people's apartments.
Safes.
Yeah, you know, but this. So let's come back to Moody's assessment of contingent liabilities. It says that contingent liability risk has not also changed. Two things they say will play an important role in determining risks that contingent liabilities pose to the credit profile are, one, how the new government reviews large infrastructure projects that may have benefited from a government-guaranteed loans in the past, and two, the outstanding debt of 1MDB.
That's right. So so these two things you know, could change the way they view the credit profile risks. However, some areas of immediate concern that Moody's has highlighted, Sharad, has been the removal of GST. So Moody's is saying that, you know, without other measures to plug the revenue gap, removing GST is, in their view, credit negative. They're reckoning that, you know, this narrows the tax base and it increases the government's reliance on oil-related revenue. So they've even come out so far as to say that they're estimating that the revenue that's lost from the scrapped GST would be about 1.1% of GDP this year. Next year, it could look at, it could even be 1.7% going forward. And this really would, I guess, put a strain on Malaysia's fiscal strength.
Well, it must be said that the government is fully aware of this shortfall in revenues coming from the scrapping of GST. It was part of their promise. Mm. And the, of course, the test for them was whether they can make sense of this, either in terms of reviewing those liabilities they're going to be having, you know, going forward in terms of those infrastructure projects, but also how they grow the revenue base. I mean, they could expand the list of taxable items under the SST is one possibility. And of course, they've been very lucky to catch the rising price of crude at this point in time, but the long term, that might not be possible for them. So the question is, you know, they must prove to the Malaysian public that they have a plan going forward.
Sure, they reckon that, you know, the removal of the GST could boost private consumption in the short term, but whether that's enough to spur the economy in the long run. Just coming back to, you mentioned oil prices, and you're right, you know, we're very lucky to have been on this uptrend of oil prices. Currently, it's about 70 plus bucks per barrel. It's up 60% from a year ago. So really, you know, so this is kind of the sweet spot, but it does, it worries me, it worries Moody's as well. If we do increase our reliance on oil, our dependence on oil revenue, that what happens if it's a downturn, right? And as we know with the oil cycles, there will be a downturn sometime down the road.
And you tighten your belt.
Yeah. But what happens when we reintroduce fuel subsidies, as the government has promised? This could be credit negative, according to Moody's, because you're distorting the market-based pricing mechanisms that are already somewhat in place. And this could mean, again, increased exposure to oil fluctuations.
Now, also on the question of a weakening ringgit, should that be a worry to with respect to our debt? Apparently not, because Malaysia's public debt is largely denominated in the ringgit.
Yeah.
97%, almost all of Malaysian debt is denominated in local currency. This mitigates external risks. And the question, of course, is, I mean, this is coming from the Moody's report.
Yeah, so actually, it's not coming from the Moody's report, but it is a look at what's happening with the ringgit now, because the ringgit weakening actually is a function of a strengthening US dollar. So luckily, most of our debt is denominated in ringgit, which means that our exposure to any kind of foreign currency fluctuations should be technically relatively low. But if you do look at the ringgit, it just closed under $4. So 4 ringgit to the dollar, just 3 ringgit 99 cents to the US dollar. It's up 1%. About a month ago, it was 3.95. So there you go. We're just seeing a lot of strength coming up from the US dollar.
So, I mean, the currency story is obviously affected by what we're comparing ourselves to.
Yeah.
Now, let's take a look at Toyota's move to invest $1 billion US dollars in Grab, valuing it at over $10 billion US dollars. That's Grab, you know, coming from Malaysia, but I guess headquartered in Singapore.
Singapore. So I'm going to claim it as a Malaysian company. Anyway, so valuing Grab at $10 billion US dollars, that makes it about 40 billion ringgit. To put this into perspective, that figure is about the same size as Genting Group's market cap, which is at 37 billion ringgit. Singapore Airlines' market cap is about $10 billion US dollars as well. So there you go. You've got a ride-hailing company that's about the same, valued to be the same as Singapore Airlines. Really quite an interesting time for Grab, because this investment by Toyota is double the size of General Motors' investment in Lyft, which is Uber's rival in the US. If you look at the valuations of some of Grab's peers, Uber was valued at $62 billion US dollars. This was announced back in May. And Didi Chuxing was valued at about $56 billion after a fundraising round in December.
So, I mean, just to put my head straight about this valuation, it's because Toyota has decided to take to buy a percentage of a Grab at $1 billion US dollars that the entire company then gets valued that way, right?
Yeah, because so this they're is not buying a percentage. they're investing that $1 billion into Grab. But what they get out of it is essentially eventually a Toyota executive will be appointed to Grab's board. And they have, and they've communicated this previously, they want to become a mobility company rather than a car maker. They want to move beyond making and selling cars. And what they've been doing is really tying up with tech companies. I think they had a tie-up with Amazon recently. They want to create a fully autonomous pizza delivery car. So you could get your pizza delivered through a driverless car. And they've also tied up with Apple when it comes to their CarPlay to be on their new Toyota model. So really all about data analytics when it comes to Toyota's future. They've also, I believe, installed some kind of data collecting mechanism in Grab cars, so to see how Grab drivers actually operate, and by doing that they can then build better cars that suit drivers practices.
Okay, we're coming up to the top of the hour, and then we will have the bulletin. We'll be back with the opening numbers of the stock market. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Fuel your business drive with the Volvo S90 T8 twin engine. So cost efficient, it makes good business sense. Volvo, made by Sweden.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.